of creating that he had done. Thus far, our reading. This week is a week in which we celebrate, or this weekend, when we celebrate and give thanks for the gift of work. In fact, even our own society that we live in acknowledges the value of labor and gives us a rest tomorrow to think of the ways in which our labor enriches us and nourishes our lives and that of our community. Labor Day. But this week also is a week in which many people go back to work, especially those who are educators, teachers, staff, and students go back to work. Students have an important vocation, even as they learn. As I think about my own kids returning to school and just sending off my eldest to Calvin College in Grand Rapids, where she begins her university career, I remember this rather humorous story. I think I've shared it once before, but it's one that might be worth sharing as we begin this message again. And it's the story that a teacher named Linda tells. She's a first grade teacher, and she, of course, has one of her jobs is helping these students who used to be in kindergarten, and in this story it was a half-day kindergarten, not a full-day kindergarten like is common today. She was talking to a young man in her class named Ryan, and it was lunchtime. And Ryan was busy putting on his coat and his boots, and Linda could tell that Ryan was getting ready to go home, as he did in kindergarten. So Linda went to her student and said to him, "Ryan, you look like you're getting ready to go home, but right now we're just going to eat lunch together, and then after lunch, we're all going to spend the rest of the afternoon together and learn some more things." And at that point, little Ryan looked at her, quite perplexed. And he said, "Who signed me up for this program anyways?" Do you know, I suspect that that little cat quip from Ryan is one that a number of us feel at times. I suspect that a number of us feel at certain moments in our daily task, "Who signed me up for this anyways?" When our little toddler thinks that it's a game to throw his plate of food off the high chair right onto the floor, even though after he did this the previous 10 times you strongly communicated otherwise, we do wonder as parents, "Who signed me up for this?" We all have moments in our daily task, as parents, maybe as a millwright on the plant floor, or as a student in the classroom, when our papers are piling up this high and our grades over the last semester are down around here, we say to ourselves, "I paid money for this? Who signed me up for this program?" I think many of us feel that at certain moments in our life. While it's true that for many of us this may be a momentary feeling, I think that often in the culture in which we live, there is a growing sense that this isn't just a momentary feeling, but this is a feeling that we have about work in general. In fact, a lot of people in our day live with a sense that work is a kind of necessary evil. Work is a means to an end, and that end is a better lifestyle, perhaps more exciting leisure, better vacations, a bigger home, nicer cars. Work is a means to another end, and it sometimes feels like people think of work as sort of a necessary evil, that a grind that they have to do. I remember when I was working in Toronto as an engineer, and if you've ever lived there, you know that in the summer, every weekend there's this mass exodus out of the city. People leave on Friday night by the droves and head north to cottage country. And often when you work in the city of Toronto, you get the sense from people that it's Monday, but the weekend's coming. They live with a sense that the weekend is what really matters. And they talk about the weekend when they get back to work on Monday, and they're talking about the next weekend throughout the week. It's like work is the daily grind that lets us enjoy the weekend. Who signed me up for this program? I want to enjoy life. That, of course, is a view of work that is very distant from the Scriptures. In the Bible, we find that there is very significant dignity and purpose in our work. As we consider the text that I read this morning, I want us to observe a few things. There's a great deal that we could say about that passage, but let's observe together just a few things. The first that we notice in Genesis chapter 2, verse 2, is that God himself works. In fact, we find that work is part of the warp and woof of the divine activity. It's in the nature of God to work, we sense in Genesis chapter 1 and 2. And not only do we read in our text of God working, but in other places in the Bible, we see that God is continuously working. He didn't just work to create the world. He works to sustain it and to provide for it. For instance, in Psalm 104, we read that the Lord set the earth on its foundations, but not only did he set the earth on its foundations, he makes springs that pour water into the ravines. His work is an ongoing work. He gives water to the beasts of the field. And later in that same psalm, we see that all creatures look to the Lord to give them their food at the proper time. And in the text that we read, we have this sense that when God has rested, when he's finished the work of creating, he steps back and he says, "That's beautiful. That's beautiful." One writer puts it this way: in the beginning, there was work. This account of God himself involved in the work of creation is actually a unique account among the ancient Near Eastern religions of the world. Many biblical scholars have observed that in other origin accounts from other nations in the ancient world, frequently the building, the beginning of the world and of human history are the result of cosmic forces that are at war with each other. In the Babylonian creation account called the Enuma Elish, the god Marduk overcomes the goddess Tiamat and forges the world out of her remains. Indeed, creation is forged out of conflict. In other cultures, we have the sense of gods living lives of leisure and making humans to do their work for them, making humans busy with activity in order to work for the gods. This account is altogether different from the account that we find in Scripture. In the Scriptures, we see that the divine being works. In the Scriptures, we see that God works for the sheer joy of working. In fact, we see, as one writer says, work could not have a more exalted inauguration. And then we notice in our text that humans are given the mandate to work. None of the other creatures have this mandate. You may have noticed that, or we didn't read those earlier passages, but if you did, you'd notice that none of the other creatures have the same kind of mandate as human beings do. All other creatures are simply involved in the task of reproducing, of multiplying, of taking care of themselves. whether it's a bear or a bee, their work is simply looking after their own species and reproducing, taking care of themselves. Now, it's true that God, in his wisdom, has allowed for some animals to be very integral in caring for the creation. Take a bee, for instance. Their work of caring for themselves also involves the work of pollinating, which, of course, we benefit from, as do other species. But among the creatures, there's no conscious sense of doing work. It's just what they're programmed to do. But it's altogether different for human beings, because they're given the task of ruling, of subduing, of having dominion over. In fact, that word to rule or subdue, as it's often translated, that verb has the meaning of bringing under one's control for one's advantage. To some in our society, that feels arrogant. Who do you think you are that you can bring creation under your control and rule for your advantage? In fact, that way of thinking perhaps has contributed to some of the global environmental issues that we face. Nevertheless, there is a sense in which God has created us to rule over or subdue. It might be paraphrased in this way, as one author does: to harness the potential of creation and use its resources for your benefit. In the ancient Near East, particularly in Israelite culture, this would have suggested cultivating foods, mining the ground for its mineral riches, using trees for construction, domesticating animals so that they can be used in different ways. We see in Genesis 1 and 2 that God himself does that. That God himself uses the resources of the world that he has created. He uses those resources to provide for us. He creates a garden, fills it with beautiful plants, with lush fruit trees, with springs for water, and he uses those things to provide for us, to care for us. God himself even uses animals, as we find a little bit later in the story, to provide skins that clothe us. God himself demonstrates how we can harness the potential of a good creation that he brought into existence and calls us to do the very same thing. We might put it this way: harness the potential of creation and use its resources for the benefit of yourself and others. You see, when we think about work in that way, in that context, when we think about living out our callings in that way, then a profound thing strikes us. We're actually imitating God. You could even say we're co-laboring with God. You see it clear in the Bible that God takes care of his creation, but he also mandates us to do the very same. In fact, he has designed us to be, you might say, co-caretakers with him. Many have observed that this calling to work, to co-labor with God, is one of the important ways in which we image God. There are many things that we could say about this idea in Scripture that we have been created in the image of God, but one of the things it expresses is that as God's image bearers, we are called to display and live out our identity as made in the image of God. There's an extended quote that I'd like to share with you, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the book that it came from. It's a fine book written by a philosophy professor at Calvin College, actually one that I had, and just as a little aside, my daughter, who's taking history of philosophy, will have the same professor. It doesn't often happen that your dad and your daughter have the same prof, but his name is Lee Hardy, and he wrote a book on work. It's called The Fabric of This World. It's an extended quote. Let me read it for you. Work is not only an activity by which we respond to God's original command, but by it we also express God's image within us. With wisdom and power, God created the world, but the activity of creation did not stop there. In Genesis, we read that God created human beings in his own image and entrusted them with the task of carrying on the activity of creation, giving further form to the raw material of nature, actualizing the potentials tucked away in the world in a way which serves human society, and at the same time glorifies God and his lavish benevolence. When we carry out this project in our work, we do something godlike. We image God. That means when a mother nurtures her infant child at her breast, lavishing love upon her, giving herself selflessly yet another night at 3 o'clock in the morning, when she changes the third poop-filled diaper of the day and later finds a little remnant of that diaper under her fingernail, she is imaging God. When a garbage man, or perhaps I should say a waste management technician, when a garbage man collects the waste of our neighborhood and disposes of it in a responsible way so that our neighborhoods are kept clean, when a sanitation engineer ensures that our wastewater is properly treated before being released into the rivers and waterways of our world, when an electrical engineer ensures that the infrastructure of our electrical network is working well, when people are about their daily task in a way that contributes to the well-being of society and cares for others, each of them are doing something God-like. You see, I could go on. When a carpenter makes a good quality home, when a nurse in a cancer clinic gives skillful consideration to a chemotherapy patient in a way that overflows with compassion, they are doing something God-like. Think about work now in this context. Let me read for you another quote that comes from that same book. Work is the social place where people can exercise the gifts that God has given them in the service of others. For God did not create us as self-sufficient individuals. We all have needs which we alone cannot meet. By necessity, we live in communities of interdependent individuals, and we are to make use of what talents we have to do service to others, as they in turn serve us. Together, we build up society as a mutual support system. That means that when we eat bread on our table, God didn't just provide that bread for us by sending sunshine and rain so wheat could grow. God provided bread for us by empowering farmers to harvest the wheat, by using engineers and mechanics to build machinery that could harvest the wheat, by employing truckers that transport that bread to bakeries and to shops around the community. God provided our daily bread by empowering bakers and store clerks to stock the shelves and make it possible for us to buy the bread. He even gave us work so that we could earn money to buy that bread. You see very quickly how God provides daily bread for us by employing many people in their ordinary work and allowing that work to be work that is used so that he can care for his people. Do you know, as you think about work in that way, it's actually a lot like the way the New Testament describes the church should work. In various places in the New Testament, like 1 Corinthians chapter 12 or Ephesians chapter 4, the writers describe the church as a body made up of individuals that accomplish various tasks, just like the body is made up of individual parts, hands and feet and minds. And when they work in a union. And in the New Testament, for the church, when they work under the lordship of Jesus, they are working as they are designed. It's not a stretch to take that metaphor and apply it to society. Whether it's a carpenter, whether it's a business executive, whether it's a tradesman, whether it's a homemaker, when they work together under the lordship of Christ, there is a delightful harmony and union that happens in a community, in a city, in a country. It sounds a lot like the church. That makes us think about our work with a bit of a critical spirit, too. Because sometimes the work that people are involved in is, and I must be careful here, is of usefulness that maybe is questionable. Maybe some of you get Maclean's magazine. This was a recent edition. And on the front page are listed a whole bunch of jobs and what the average salary is. Now, as you read the article, you'll see that folks like Justin Bieber, who sing and entertain teenagers, make around $55 million a year, whereas garbage collectors maybe make $40,000, $50,000 a year. In fact, an article like this makes us think that the importance of work is directly proportional to how much money we earn. And yet, in the scriptures, we see something very different. The usefulness of our work maybe is in disproportion to how much money we earn. In fact, Lee Hardy in his book says this: a garbage collector performs an infinitely more valuable social service than the advertising executive about to launch a campaign to convince the American homemaker that pink froth dish detergent is indispensable to gracious living. But the latter, he says, for reasons difficult to fathom, enjoys more social status. Indeed, we are left to wonder about the usefulness of the work that we are involved in. In another story that is shared in the book that I'm referring to by Lee Hardy, he quotes an interview that comes out of another book called Why Work. It's an interview with a woman named Debbie Price, who was an interior designer at one point in her career in Aspen, Colorado, and was involved with clients in building and decorating multi-million dollar homes and rooms. She left her career as an interior designer and became an administrative assistant in a Baptist church. Later in her career, she served as a secretary to a senator. She was asked, "Why did you leave such a lucrative interior designer job and become a secretary?" This is what she said: "I finally made the decision when I realized I wasn't being valuable to anyone. Nor was I able to be enthusiastic about any aspect of my work. I realized it wasn't right for me to be doing what the job required. Not that there was anything dishonest or illegal involved, but I was being paid on a commission basis, 30% of the gross profit. One client spent $20,000 on furnishing a 10 by 12 room, and I got a 30% cut. I began to question my motivation for encouraging people to buy. I really couldn't believe that it was good stewardship of my talents to be persuading customers to spend huge sums of money on furniture. So although it was a lucrative position, I decided to leave." Indeed, as we think about our work, we are invited to think in those ways too. As difficult as that can be, as hard as that can be for us, we are beginning to realize that our work, and maybe a different word needs to be used, our calling or our vocation. And we're going to say more about that in our evening service tonight. I do invite you to come to that as we unpack this a little bit more deeply. Our work, our vocation, is really more than what we do just 8 hours a day. It's more than what we get paid to do. Though a homemaker doesn't get paid, most would recognize that they have a very important role in society. In fact, as we think about our callings, we wonder about the calling that God has put on the entirety of our lives. And I say that because sometimes some of us feel like our jobs are kind of unfulfilling. The contemporary testimony that we read earlier said, even in dull routine, we are called to honor God. When I worked for Ford Motor Company and supervised an assembly line where we built electronic products, that line involved about 20 people, mostly women, who what they did for 8 hours a day was take an electronic component and stick it in a circuit board. 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, take an electronic component, stick it in a circuit board. Now, from my perspective, that didn't seem like a deeply fulfilling job. And as a supervisor, I tried to make that job fulfilling by helping them have input into the way the line ran and think about quality issues and create a kind of team environment that would give people maybe a greater sense of ownership. But at the end of the day, it wasn't a deeply fulfilling job, I suspect, for many of them. Some of us find ourselves doing jobs that maybe we don't find deeply fulfilling. Certainly, if we do the job of placing electronic components in circuit boards that will go into vehicles and control things, we might say, I want to do this well so that the car that is built is safe and will help people drive more safely. But if you think about work in a bigger context, what if that person, though maybe not deeply energized by their daily task, maybe if that daily task not only allows them to provide for their own needs and their family and perhaps give generously to others, what if that daily task also affords them the mental space and perhaps the out-of-work time to be deeply invested in maybe a neighborhood school tutoring kids, or deeply invested in a church program, maybe leading an ESL program or some other thing, maybe deeply invested in advocating for justice in their community? Perhaps for some people, when they think of their vocation and their calling, it isn't primarily about what they get paid to do, but that is a part of the other things that God has invited them into, that God has called them into, where they can use their gifts and their talents and their abilities in ways that are fulfilling and meaningful and satisfying. You see, when we think of vocation or calling more broadly than just our 8 hours a day at work, we see that even in what might be perceived as unfulfilling jobs, God can be at work, helping us build cars that are safe, but also allowing us time in which we can bring blessing to others. Something that I want to conclude with. For all of us are thinking perhaps about the ways in which our lives are contributing to the work that God is doing in our world. All of us are thinking about how our lives connect to God's work, whether that's as an engineer, a teacher, a mom, a grandfather. One of the things that Jesus said, and perhaps gives a sense of calling and inspiration to each of us, which I conclude with. In the beginning was work, and Jesus said in the Gospel of John, My Father is always at work to this very day, and I too am working. Indeed, let's follow in the footsteps of Jesus and allow all of our activities to connect with the work that God is doing in our world. Let's pray. We thank you, O God, for the calling that you have placed on our lives individually and as your people communally. We thank you for the way in which you have created us to imitate you as a God who works, as a God who is always at work, providing and caring for his people and the world that he's made. As we imitate you and use our lives to care for others, to contribute to the greater good, use our lives, O Lord,